You're listening to the Photobomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me, as always, is Gary Hughes.
Hi, Boo Ray.
And our third man today is Derek Mateo.
Hey, how's it going?
The young handsome buck, learning at the foot of his elders?
More of a fawn than a buck.
More of a
really?
Fawn?
Come on, bro.
Yeah, dude. Bro.
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 Right there. That right there tells you exactly how old Derek is.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, yep.
I'm youthful.
He's what you call a millennial.
He's a millennial.
He's a millennial.
Speaking of the millennials.
All right.
I had something interesting happen to me just this last week. A friend of mine, disc jockey.
By the way, first of all, I just want to say something interesting happens to you every week.
Yes, it does. It does happen to me every
because
week.
We open with that
yes,
a lot.
Yes, we do. A lot of interesting things happen to me here.
Okay.
A friend of mine, disc jockey, we do a lot of events together. We work together a lot. And I've been redoing his website and trying to get more into social media, et cetera, et cetera. Been asking me for images, which I have been providing to him. He had someone who was doing this for him. So Bobby comes to me the other day and she says, you know, look on Instagram here. They just posted some of your pictures, except your logo isn't. You can't see your logo on the picture.
Son of a bitch!
Because it's been cropped. So I know this guy, and I know this isn't intentional. I've sent him too many pictures in the past. So I call him up. I'm like, dude, if you're gonna take my pictures and post them on Instagram without telling me, I would appreciate it if you would leave the logo on there. And he's
bitch.
Like, what? I've got someone else doing. You know, the old classic. You know, that's not me. That's
my web guy,
right? In this case, it was true. He really had someone else doing it, which I figured. And I was like, okay, you know, it's really nice. He's just so apologetic, and I'll take care of it right away. And I'm like, listen, I know you didn't do it on purpose. Just, you know, do me a favor and don't do it anymore. Okay, no problem. So then I talked to him at an event just this last weekend, and he goes, oh, by the way, I fired that person that was doing my social media. And I'm like, oh, you didn't have to fire somebody. He goes, no. He goes, you don't understand. When I went to her and I said, listen, you can't do this, she argued with me nonstop about it. I go, really? She goes, yeah. She was like, listen, he just needs to get over that. He just needs to get over that. This whole, you know, people owning stuff on the web. Listen, when it's on the web, it's out there. Anybody can use it. Like, he just needs to get over that.
Somebody needs to introduce her to copyright law.
Yeah. Yes, copyright law would be nice.
Like a server.
But the thing that we talked about, he and I were talking about, the whole thing that got me was, even more so than that, even let's just say for a minute that you're right. Let's just say for a minute that I am weird and I just need to get over it. It doesn't change the fact that we have a business relationship, and out of courtesy, you should respect my wishes.
Absolutely.
Even if I wasn't right, and I am totally right.
Which the guy did.
He absolutely did. You know, he doesn't want to burn the bridge with me. I refer work to him.
Right.
You know, so he's, of course, you know, if I say, listen, I'll give you lots of images, but keep my logo, you got it.
Absolutely.
It's in his best interest to keep me happy, and he gets free product, and everything's great. No, that wasn't good enough for her. She wanted to argue.
I'm glad he fired her.
Yeah, right.
Good. She deserved to be fired.
But I wonder, is that a millennial thing?
No, that's not a millennial thing.
Blah, blah, blah.
That's not a millennial thing. That's a big word to say for people like me who say dude, bro all the time, okay?
It's not a millennial thing.
I start sentences with dude and end them with bro.
But let me ask you this, though. If you weren't a photographer, do you think you would have that attitude?
You wouldn't have the knowledge.
Because you've been educated to know about copyright.
I still would have the courteousness of...
Right, that's my point. Is that even if you think, you know, that old dude needs to get over that, still your boss says, by the way, don't be posting any pictures without using the logo.
Either way, you do what your boss tells you.
Yeah, you just go, okay. You don't go, dude, that's crazy. Hit the bricks.
Yep.
You're done.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's just I was like, she argued with you?
Interesting.
He got rid of a liability anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't want to cause those types of problems with other people that you work with, but here's an interesting idea. Having this conversation with my wife this morning, we had a client of ours who's used us several times to do work for her, and she was sent an email out. And it was mistakenly sent to Julie's email, where it was sent to somebody that she knows. And it was, because we put up an online gallery for this type of work, where it's not our regular portrait work, we do in-person sales. Put up an online gallery. And she sent the email, and it accidentally went to Julie on like a carbon copy or whatever. And it said, hey, so-and-so, how can I get these images from the gallery downloaded so that I can have them all? And then Julie politely replied, actually, the gallery is available in high resolution for you to purchase at such and such and such. The online galleries are meant so that you're not supposed to be able to download them, just to view them. They're your digital proofs.
Right.
And so, and obviously with a lot of our clients, we're friends on Facebook. And so she had posted, she had basically hit the print screen button and screen captured some of the images from the gallery and was posting them online. And it was under the pretense of, and rightly so, it was basically, okay, I'm trying to decide between these three headshots. What do you think?
Okay.
So she had posted them on Facebook, and I sent her a very polite message. I was like, hey, so-and-so, I know that you're probably not up to date on this, but just so you know, photographers, this is an important issue to us. It's about copyright, and this is how we make our living, and I'm happy to break up the gallery. I can make another one for you with less images if you're having trouble narrowing down, and then you can just share the link. But, you know, cropping and blah, 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 stealing images. And I was really polite, and I explained it all to her, and she goes, oh, sorry, I had no idea. And then I was like, okay, I'm good, because I always dread those messages that you have to have that talk with the client.
Oh, absolutely.
When you have an online gallery.
Absolutely.
Because honestly, I feel like for the most part, with people like you said who aren't educated on copyright photographers, that's something we deal with all the time. But so I go on Facebook because I want a messenger. We're starting to do these blog posts, which I'll talk about in another episode. I want to talk about using your blog and stuff to bring business to your studio and social media, etc. And so I wanted to ask her if I could do an article because, you know, with her family, because they're, you know, for whatever reason, we were going to feature them because they've used us many times. So I don't have her email. Julie does. So I get on Facebook because we're friends on Facebook, and I search for her, and I can't find her. She's unfriended me and blocked me. And I messaged Julie. I said, maybe this is a mistake. I said, can you see if you can find her? And Julie couldn't find her. Unfriended Julie and blocked Julie. And this is someone who uses us all the time because of that. Like,
yeah.
How it, and I felt like awful in the way that
it's getting to the point where you feel really, really bad. If it's not too much trouble, could you maybe possibly not steal from me and my family? Would that be too much to ask?
In the parlance of our times,
that's the way you have to do it.
Yeah. In the parlance of our times, fuck that shit, dude. That's my job. It's like going into, you know, like a restaurant and just going in the back and taking stuff and leaving.
Yes.
You know, it's like,
but they don't think that, they don't see it, they don't feel that way, and they think that you are crazy to be that way.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, there's that attitude. It's like, oh, it's digital, it's out there. And yeah, there is a certain amount of that. As long as my logo's on it, I really don't care where you post it, you do with it. As long as, even if my logo's not on it, if you just assign credit, which in the case, actually, this person that I spoke about, this client, always gave us image credit, tagged us all the time. She sent so much work to us over the last couple of years, and it's been a really good relationship. So I felt comfortable with her going, hey, you know, but we'd already seen she was trying to steal the images.
Yeah.
So it was, on the one hand, she was being really respectful with our work and stuff, and on the other hand, she was trying to steal them without paying for them.
Right.
And I don't get that.
Well, you know, I talked about before about the person who, the dance moms who posted the pictures on Facebook from the online gallery. And when we called them on it, they said, oh, well, we thought it was okay to do that because you had stamped copyright across the image.
Yeah.
No, that's telling you you're not supposed to do it.
I don't think you should get bitter and twisted about it.
Yeah.
After a while, it's almost like if you're a police officer and all you see just the worst all in all, you can get jaded over time.
Sure.
But you have to treat every single person you interact with as a new case.
Right.
Like you have to give every individual person the benefit of the doubt. But I get so tired of having these conversations with clients, and it's like, you got to do something and like rearrange your business in a way that if you hate dealing with this, if it frustrates you, then eliminate doing any online galleries. Make the clients come in and look at stuff. Like, there's just ways to do it, or let it go, or just get over it.
Get over it.
Or get all the money up front. Say, we sell it, and you buy all the images, and then do whatever the heck you want with them.
There has to be a solution, but it's getting tougher and tougher. The whole idea that I'm not doing anything online, it's getting very, very hard in this modern world to say, I'm not going to do stuff online. Everything is done online. And the millennials, the idea that they would have to come physically and do something involving any sort of media. Yeah. What? You want me to go down to Blockbuster and rent a video while I'm at it?
Yeah.
Why would I do that?
Yeah, that's why they went out of business. But it's like Louis C.K.'s bit when he's talking about banking. He's like, when you drive by the bank, you're like, what are those people doing in there?
Right. Like, I don't ever
the money's
to the
out here.
Yeah, I don't ever go to the bank. All right, we have a fantastic guest today
on the show. I'm glad you brought that up before it got away from us. We have an amazing guest on our show. Today's guest is a former president of the PPA, current chairperson of the board for PPA. a incredible photographer and artist, and has been working on some really cool stuff, and we're going to touch on some really cool issues. Not to mention, she is a excellent drinking buddy. I would like to bring to the show today my friend and personal hero, Susan Michael. What's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing really good. Thank you for agreeing to do this. You are a busy, busy lady.
Lately, I've been very busy, that's for sure.
So we brought you on the show to talk about a couple of things. First of all, let's talk a little bit about your business. You've been in the photography business for a long time and had even a career before that. So photography is your second career, but you've been in it a long time. What kind of stuff are you doing? What's your day-to-day besides personal projects and stuff? What type of business do you have? What type of work do you do mostly?
Well, my regular photography business is portrait children, weddings, that kind of thing, just what you would expect at a portrait studio.
Right on. And you have an awesome studio, by the way. It's like it's a really cool space. Can we talk a little bit about having that and what kind of cool stuff you got going on there?
Yeah, well, I bought a physical studio, in 1999. I don't know how many years ago that was. Do
16,
the math.
16 years ago, yeah.
That's a while. You're fast, dude. And it's 2 acres of property. You know, I bought it at a time when I had just started my business, and of course I was afraid to buy it. And hindsight is, it's the best thing I've ever done. I mean, basically, I bought a park, and now when most photographers are shuffling their clients down to a park and don't have anywhere to, you know, take them to the bathroom or for a 2-year-old to have a timeout, I've got one of the only spaces in my area where they can actually come. It's very convenient. We can come in, have a, you know, a Coke or something when they need to take a little break, and then go back out and do some more things. And over the years, we've done all kinds of cool things to the property. And it's basically like a little fairyland back here. So I'm really fortunate to have that.
Yeah, it's an awesome space. It's like you got this great big piece of land with all these different sets on it and this cool stuff. So you can do all this great location portraiture without ever actually leaving your own property. I think that's really, really
dream.
Awesome.
My dream is to have something like that.
Well, yeah, and from a business perspective, it makes sense because you're not wasting your time, right, you know, running around to some park and spending hours waiting on people. And then also, you know, you're able to spend that time doing whatever else you need to be doing. And having a physical business location, in my opinion, is a real leg up for a photographer, because while it's okay to have an in-home studio and there's nothing wrong with people doing business like that, having a place where clients come and you actually do business presents a completely different viewpoint to the client. And also from a photographer's, you know, point of view, just getting up every day and getting dressed and coming to work like real people do makes a huge difference in your mindset. Imagine getting up and going and getting dressed and coming to work.
Oh, that's one of the things that that has really, like, exactly like you said, changed my business from having our actual office where we go to work is no longer in the house and hasn't been for a couple of years. But I take, you know, work is, I get a lot more done because, you know, I don't have to, like, oh, well, I guess I could do the dishes or, you know, vacuum or something or whatever.
It is. Like, you stop working to do the dishes.
I don't. But, you
well,
know.
I think that's a great point. You know, photographers get up, they're in their home, they do whatever they need to do to get their home ready for the day, get the kids off to school. And they run around in their pajamas to 1 o'clock. Then all of a sudden they watch a television show. And then in their mind, they've been working for 4 hours. But the truth is they've done nothing.
Yeah, that's actually a really awesome point, because I find that when you're working in your home, it can be so. Certain people I think are really good at it. Certain people are good self motivating go getters. But for, you know, we've talked about this on the show 6 times. That's one of the advantages for me, is that work is where work is. And I find, like, if I'm not working, there's nothing for me to do in my studio except for work. It's like I don't have cable there and stuff like that. There's nothing to watch or do unless I want to sit in front of my computer and watch Netflix, and then I feel guilty for not getting work done.
Well, and you also get to a point in your business where, honestly, you just don't want your clients in your home. I mean, there is a line there. They're not your friends. They're friendly, and they're, you know, you do want to be your client's friends, but not in the way where they come in your home and they see, you know, your dirty laundry laying on the floor or whatever. It's just a little too much to have them there.
No, that's a really interesting point that we have actually never talked about, is that when you're meeting clients and stuff in your home, that sometimes if you don't have it separated in the right way, that client-friend relationship can get murky. And I know that's been weird for Julie and I, because we have we started, you know, in our 20s, we started our business. And when most of our clients that are getting married, that are having kids and stuff, they're right around our same age, usually interested in a lot of the same things. And so we tend to find, you know, meeting with these people that we have stuff in common with, and that the line between friend and business can kind of get blurred sometimes, and having a separate space is actually something that can help you do that. Because if a client becomes a friend, then it can become one of those things where you lose a stream of income.
Oh, absolutely. That happens all the time. And, you know, it's hard to charge your friends, and you want to be friends with your clients. But, you know, and there's a number of really good friends of mine that have been my clients, and it's really hard when they come in. You know, we've got one coming Saturday. We're doing her daughter's senior portraits, and, you know, they spent $4,000 on their last daughter's senior portraits. And in the last couple of years, we've gotten to be really good friends. And, you know, it's hard to expect them to spend that same amount again.
That is interesting. You know, I was just following a group on Facebook where one photographer posted on there that, and I'd be really interested in your take on this, she has a cousin who they're going to be at Thanksgiving dinner together, and her cousin happens to be pregnant, and she's like, oh, can you just bring your camera and do a couple of belly photos for me while we're all together? And then her conundrum was, do I just send her my price list, or do I just go do it, and I'm working on Thanksgiving and all that stuff? And we all, one of the biggest questions I hear from photographers all the time is, what do you do with friends and family when they want you to shoot for them?
Okay, here's my answer after all my experience and years in this business. You decide who the people are that are your family, your real family, and you don't charge them. You just know they're not going to pay. And you do that out of the goodness of your heart, and it's up to you how much of that you do. And that's what you give, because otherwise you'll always be fighting that battle.
Yeah,
then you've got friends who are specified friends, and you'll know when they're those people, where you just say up front, look, just buy whatever you want. I'm going to give you 50% off. That'll at least cover my cost. And it'll, you know, pay for a little bit of your time, and at least then you've set parameters for those people. And then everyone else needs to go off the regular price list. And honestly, if they don't expect you to charge them, they're not really much of a friend, because they wouldn't be doing their business for you for free.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I remember that I had a friend of mine actually paid me when I was intending to do it for free. He said, no, I have to pay you because you've got a new business and you're my friend and I want you to be successful. So, here, you know, what do I owe you? Because I'd have to pay somebody else to do it. I might as well pay you.
Well, good for that friend. That's a real friend.
Only time that's ever happened.
it doesn't happen often, I can assure you.
No, it sure doesn't. There's a couple other things I really wanted to talk to you about, because I think it's really interesting for the large majority of people in the photography business now are women, overwhelmingly so. I think if you've gone to WPPI or Imaging USA or any other of those sorts of events, you can see how many young women are in the photography business, women of all ages, as a matter of fact. But here's the thing. You've been in the photography business before the giant surge of new photographers came in like the, you know, probably 2005, 2006 was when the amount of photographers in the world seemed to triple in the course of a couple of years, or maybe even more than that. But you started in the photography business when it was very much a boys' club. And I think that that is to do everything that you've done, to be involved in the associations, to be on the board and eventually become the president of the Professional Photographers of America in a very male-dominated industry when you started. I think that's really awesome, and it's a thing that a lot of young female photographers and male photographers, all of us, can kind of look up to. What was that like coming into an industry like that and staying in these associations even against, you know, the kind of adversity that we can't even sometimes wrap our mind around as men in the business?
Well, I think it's interesting. I was in the music business before I got into photography. And I mean, I lived out in LA, made a living playing music for, you know, 15 or 20 years. And that kind of set me up to have a little bit of a tougher skin than the average person. And also it gave me, you know, a lot of advantages. Certainly when I first started this, I felt that in the industry. But for me personally, I was so strong as an artist already in terms of my experience with music that I didn't really let it affect me that much. So I think I looked at it differently than some people. I've heard a lot of photographers, especially women, complain that, you know, they'll go to an event or something and they get treated like the hired help. And I have to honestly say, I have never felt like that. Maybe it's because I'm 5'9". Maybe it's because of my experience or the way I carry myself.
You're kind of a commanding presence.
Just a little bit. I'm kind of like an in charge kind of girl.
Yeah, this is
true. And so I have never really felt that much. But I will tell you that even recently, you know, I've been with other of our friend male photographers that, you know, I work with in different aspects of PPA and such. that very much wanted to act that male part out. And I was shocked. In fact, I remember using the words, you know, you need to learn to be a little more gracious,
That's a really interesting point, though, because it seems like as a woman in any business, just a woman in the world, and Boo Ray and I talk about stuff like this all the time because we have daughters, is that you want the best for them. But it's hard because, like, okay, so recently there was the Democratic, the first Democratic presidential debate for the candidates.
Oh, God, are we going there?
No. I'm not going to go about politics. I just want to make a point.
Go ahead.
Because you had Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton on the stage, right? And whatever you think about their politics, this isn't that. But Bernie Sanders is very, like, assertive and loud and almost comes across angry. But people were into his outrage in some cases almost.
Sure.
But for Hillary Clinton, who is a woman as a politician.
If she came across that way.
Like, she'd be a bitch.
She'd be a bitch.
Or she'd be, like, bossy. Or yes. She'd be... Whereas, if there's this line you have to walk as a woman, as a strong woman...
If you're a man, you're commanding and you show leadership skills. And if you're a woman,
you're bossy pants, yeah.
Well, God knows, I've never been called that, do you think?
Oh, please.
No, I mean, it's hard. It's really hard because, you know, you do walk that line and you do realize that... you know, sometimes you try to pull back and not come across too aggressive or too anxious. And it's a hard line to walk even for someone like me. And you know, I know we're going to talk about this new personal project that I'm on, which is a whole nother world and a whole nother set of situations. I mean, I sat down with the guy James Estrin from the New York Times Lens blog post the other day and had a conversation. And that was really interesting. So...
Well, speaking of interesting, you actually hit a major milestone recently that if you're a photographer in the associations like PPA and in your state and local, becoming a master photographer through the PPA award degree system is a pretty awesome thing for a lot of us that do it. But you've gone even to the next level above it, and you've just been the 19th woman to receive your ASP fellowship, which is a huge honor if you're in those circles. Tell us about that, what that entails, and what that process is like, just to sort of give us like a little background on how cool of a thing that is.
Wow. Well, it's a big process. You have to present 25 images and a thesis. And the thesis is anywhere from 7 to 10 or 12 pages typed long. And there's examples of what they should be like on the ASP website. But it's a pretty in-depth piece of writing, and I'm a pretty good writer, pretty confident as a writer. But I'll tell you, that's a lot, and a lot's writing on this degree. I mean, when you go into it, you put a lot of work into it, and the last thing you want is to fail and have to do it again.
So there's an application process where you have to submit images and a thesis, but who reviews it?
Okay, it's reviewed by a panel of. I believe it's 5 judges. One is a non-ASP fellow, and the other 4 are all ASP fellows. And the gallery of images are put up much like you would have in a museum-type gallery. The idea behind the selection of the images is that they all fit together. They have to work as a cohesive theme. And I think that's probably where most people tend to mess up is, you know, they want to put their best work in. But for example, in mine, I do a lot of black and white work, especially in the personal project that I'm doing, but it just didn't fit in the look of this particular thing. So I pulled all the black and white out. There were images that were some of my stronger images, but for whatever reason, I didn't think that they fit in this overall look or presentation. So I pulled them out. And, you know, apparently I figured it out since I got it. Thank God. But it's supposed to be a cohesive piece of photography work, if that makes sense.
So is this something that you shoot specifically for the fellowship?
I don't think you have to. I mean, I think you can. For me, actually, I hadn't considered the fellowship. I mean, I thought about it. Of course, everyone thinks about it, but I hadn't really strongly considered it until I started work on this personal project, and my good friend Greg Daniel took a look at it, and he goes, "That's your fellowship." And I looked at him, and I said, "Really? You think so?" And he's like, "Absolutely." And that was the first time I really considered going for it this year. And, you know, thankfully, all the pieces fell in line, and I got it.
So let me ask you this question then. When you apply, do a lot of people get rejected when they apply?
That's a touchy subject. Yes. I believe there were quite a number this year that didn't get it. And there's always a number I think, that doesn't get it. And, you know, it takes some people a few years to get it. And of course, they've put their heart and soul into it. And my heart goes out to anyone, you know, who has done it and not gotten it. Some don't try again for obvious reasons. And you know, most do try again. And it's a really hard thing. It's like your favorite image not going in the loan book, you know, and it happens. And it's just, it's a hard personal thing to take, not getting it when you've put so much work into it. So yeah, people do absolutely try for it and not get it every year.
For those people who are listening who don't necessarily understand everything about the ASP, let me just real quickly throw in a quick explanation. ASP is like the organization within the organization. There's the Professional Photographers Association of America, and then there's the ASP, which is the American Society of Photographers.
That's correct.
Okay. So in order to even be in the ASP, you have to be asked to be in the ASP, and you aren't even asked to be in the ASP until you have a degree in the PPA. So you have to be a craftsman photographer or a master photographer or a master artist before you are even eligible to be in the ASP. And then once you are in the ASP, then you are free to seek a fellowship should you so desire.
Right. And thank you for that clarification, Bure, because I, you know, we talk about a lot of stuff and we just assume knowledge.
Right.
but so on that subject, because we are creative people, but also creative professionals and entrepreneurs, one of the things that I think that is a theme that a lot of us are afraid of is rejection or somebody not liking something. Or how do you deal with that as an artist? Because it's something that you do. Like how did you feel when you realized that you were accepted, and how do you deal with rejection when that happens?
Wow. Well, you know, as a good friend of mine, you know that you know me personally, and as a professional, I come across very strong and confident, and I am. But all of us have that fear of rejection. And in this personal project that I've been working on for the last year, I have been extremely uncomfortable, and I feel the fear every day. And it's something that you have to fight down and just move forward. And in fact, so much so that I'm currently working on a book. There's two books, not to be confused. One book is a picture book, and then the other book is a book on creativity and passion and just exactly what that feeling is like and how you get through it and how you find the discipline to work through it and the processes you have to have in place to do the kind of work that I've been working on for the last year. It takes a tremendous amount of something inside you to find the ability to move through that fear and uncomfortableness to get to the other side and get your work done and get it out there. I mean, putting your work out there is hard. I have to tell you, I was at the PPA judging, not this year, but last year, and I was in the judging class, and there was a young lady that was helping behind the scenes. And I was standing there. I had come in. We had a meeting or something, and somebody was passionately arguing a print one way or the other. And she looked at me, and she had no idea who I was, and she said, "Wow, if I could talk about my work like that to my clients, I'd be rich." And I looked at her, and I said, "Bingo." And she said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Why do you think we're here? Why do you think we do this?" I said, "We're not doing this to look at pretty pictures. We're doing this to learn how to be able to present our work to our clients so that when we have issues, much like you guys were talking about earlier in the show, we know how to deal with them. We know what words to use. We have a vocabulary. You were educated." And all of that stuff comes into play.
I think that's absolutely awesome and a perfect segue into this project you've been working on. We've referenced it a couple of times. So tell us what you're working on, and then I want to talk a little bit more about where that came from and what inspired it and what the process has been like. So take it away.
Wow. Well, a year ago, I decided to start a personal project. It was a reason, of course, that I decided. And you know, I was just at a point in my career where I needed more. And I don't know that you always recognize that you need more until the very second you decide you need more. That's the funny thing about it. And a lot of things happened in my life that, you know, came together. Serendipity is a good word to use, that inspired and caused this project to move forward. And I began a fine art project not knowing exactly where or how it was going to go. And with that said, as we move forward talking, I'll tell you, I told a friend of mine last week that everything changes daily. And then I laughed and called her the other day and I said, no, it doesn't change daily. It changes on an hourly basis. So if you want to know something, call me every hour because it is changing every hour. So it's been a crazy ride, but we started it last November and I'm actually doing a project where I photograph flowers in my studio. There's a lot of reasons I decided to do it that way. And we've got gallery shows opening and I've got a fine art book coming out and it's... somebody commented the other day, you've done in 1 year what should have taken you 10 years to do. And so that's how fast this is all going.
So what exactly is the book? Like, what's the content of the book? And why did you decide, in an age where digital media seems to be eclipsing printed media in so many areas, why did you decide to make a book?
I really believe that the printed piece is still of extreme value. That's what my business is based on. We don't sell a lot of digital files in my portrait business, never have. And there's nothing like a piece of fine art or a book that you can actually put your hands on. I still love that tactile feel of a physical piece of art. And so I was really excited at the prospect of being able to actually do a fine art book. There's not that many of them out there. And frankly, once I've gotten into it, this is a whole nother discussion down the road as I go and learn about how this works and what it costs and the time that it takes to invest in it and all of the design and all the things that you have to do to come together, put a project like this together, is huge and a very large learning curve. And of course, I have lots of my friend photographers in the portrait business or PPA that would say, oh, well, yeah, I do a little bit of fine art. I want to do some fine art. Well, this is not, I want to do a little fine art. This is, we're doing fine art and we're going full tilt boogie here. So there's there's no little bit of it here.
You're creating essentially a fine art sort of coffee table book.
Yes.
And it's pictures of flowers. And I've seen some of the work from this book recently, and it's fantastic. I think if you go to SusanMichaelFineArt.com, is that the website?
That's it.
And it's SusanMichael FineArt.com. SusanMichaelFineArt.com. And you also can, I think, eventually purchase the book through there. But you're actually using this personal project also to raise money for charity. And would you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah. As an outgoing chairman of the board at PPA, you know, I've always, of course, participated in many charities in my business. And I always knew that I wanted to attach this project to a charity in some way. But the question was, which one? And, you know, there's so many deserving ones. But in the end, especially after I got my ASP fellowship, it just seemed really clear that the charity that I wanted to work with this project going forward here was PPA Charities and Operation Smile. I think Operation Smile, of course, is such a worthwhile cause for photographers because what's better than giving a smile back to a child? And, you know, in my heart, I will always be a portrait photographer. So, yes, you can go on the website and actually purchase the book, but you can actually also go on there and purchase a collection that we've put together for PPA Charities. And I've really scared myself a little bit throwing down a huge challenge to myself and to fellow photographers to help me in that we've got a collection that includes the book and a limited edition fine art print that $100 of that collection will go straight to PPA Charities. And if we're able to move 500 of those, I'll be able to present a check for $50,000 to PPA Charities. Wow. At the convention in 2016. Now, so it's a big challenge for me. I mean, it's scary, but it's a big number.
For those of you who don't know, PPA Charities is the fundraising charitable arm of PPA. And it's a fundraising organization, which means it doesn't have a specific charity, but it raises money to donate to other charities. And in some cases, it's worked with Operation Smile for many years. It's also working now with Dondo Amor, which is another charity that supports orphanages in third world countries. And in some cases, let's say even after Hurricane Katrina, they have even helped out individual photographers with financial assistance. And that's all some really cool stuff that they do. But Operation Smile, being the main charity that's been funded in part by PPA Charities over the years, is they send plastic surgeons, doctors to third world countries to repair children's cleft palates. And so just check them out. If you just Google Operation Smile, that's on there. And it's ppacharities.org is also a good place to check that out. Now, that being said, I believe it costs $240 to fix one cleft palate. I believe that's about the cost. And so for every $240 raised, Bure, get out the calculator, every $240 raised, that would be one cleft palate that gets repaired. So if you were to donate, and at Imaging USA this year, at every year, PPA Charities has a party where they basically donate the money. So for $50,000...
That's 200 smiles or more.
208.33 repeating, of course.
Exactly.
That's that many smiles, children who will go through life, and what they can do with those cleft palate surgeries is amazing now. I mean, they're just so, you know, imagine that being how your life changes.
And the thing about that gets me is it's such a bargain price. $248?
Yeah,
this
dude.
This is plastic surgery.
Yeah.
For $248.
You can't get a tooth pulled for $240.
Yeah, so already you've got these surgeons and these doctors who are already donating extensively.
They're doing it for nothing.
To the project.
Well, it's a collective effort. I mean, it's a collective effort between so many people to be able to offer it for that price and to get the word out and to actually, you know, get the surgery for the children. It's networking and a collective effort. Otherwise, it can never happen.
Well, but I think that's really an amazing thing to launch your book. And the title of the book is Flowers in Transition. Is that right?
Yes. So, and you know, it works so well with, you know, the Operation Smile. The Flowers in Transition came about because, in fact, I'm 56 years old this year, 55 when I started this project.
But you look 45.
It looks good.
Yeah.
35, did you say?
29,
yeah.
I said.
Yeah, 29. I thought that's what you said. You know, and I'm just... It's just been a very transitional year for me, and as I've reflected back, as I've worked on the second book, which is the one on creativity and passion and such, which kind of chronicles the journey of this whole project, I just realized that I've watched my clients transition over the years, you know, from doing babies to doing them as seniors, and even now I just did a girl that I originally did when she was 4 years old. I did her wedding and not long ago. And, you know, I've just been in business long enough for that to happen and watch those transitions. And that child will most likely have a grandchild, you know, in the next 5 or 6 years, and I'll be a part of that. And that's a huge transitional cycle to watch, you know, your clients go through. And the sweetest thing is, you know, it was a small wedding, and after the wedding, she came up and her and her mom made a point of presenting me with her bouquet, which I have never gotten at a wedding before.
Wow.
Gave me their bouquet and said, "We just want you to have this because we know your life has been transitioning. And, you know, we would love it if there were any of these flowers that you wanted to use." And in fact, we did do an image of one of those flowers that now is one of my favorite images that will be up at the show and in the book. And how exciting to be able to tie that all in with the photography thing. So it's been a huge transitional year. And of course, these kids with the surgeries go through huge transitions, being able to go from, you know, hardly being able to eat. It's more than a lot of people confuse it. It's more than just a physical a look thing. These children can't physically eat sometimes because of the way that their mouth is shaped. So it's definitely way beyond just the physical look of the problem. It absolutely affects them, you know, nutritionally and a lot of other ways.
Well, I think that's an absolutely amazing thing to take a personal project, to turn it into something tangible, and then also to make it charitable and use that to launch and help a whole bunch of people. Just to recap, if you go to SusanMichaelFineArt.com, you can find out about the book, Flowers in Transition. You can purchase the book, or if you purchase the package, I believe the cost is $250, and you'll get a copy of the book as soon as it's released, and you will also get a limited edition fine art print of one of the images in the book to go with it. And proceeds from each of those packages will go to PPA Charities to help support Operation Smile.
Yes, and it's under Giving Back. If you go to SusanMichaelFineArt.com, there's a tab at the top says Giving Back, and all the information is right there.
I think that's absolutely awesome, and we could probably spend like 6 days with you picking your brain, and so I reserve the right to bring you back onto the show to talk about so many other things, but you've been absolutely awesome, but we are running close to out of time. Is there anything else, anywhere else people can find you online that you want us to check out? SusanMichaelFineArt.com.
Well, of course, SusanMichael.com, just the photography site is there, my regular portrait site. SusanMichaelFineArt.com is where all the flowers are. And we have a show opening October 29th here in Jacksonville. Don't know if this will be out by then, but really excited about opening a gallery show. Imagine 40 pieces hanging in a huge gallery even that's a whole nother thing we could talk about for an hour or two.
That's absolutely awesome. What is the name of the place? And again, it's October 29th?
October 29th at the Thrasher Horn Center in Jacksonville, actually Orange Park, Florida. It's attached to a state college, and they have this amazing gallery that is something like out of New York. It's just beautiful. And we'll have the show there for 3 months.
That's awesome. And how exciting for you to take it from a portrait wedding studio, transition to fine art, and find a way to just make that happen. And I know that you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it, so it's really cool. So thanks for sharing this time. You know, I think you're awesome, and I can't wait for you to come back and share even more.
Thanks, guys. I loved being with you today.
All right. Take it easy, Susan. We'll talk
to you
later.
Thank you,
Susan.
Have a good one. Okay.
So, Boo Ray, what else do we have going on?
Oh, well, I'm actually in Tallahassee tonight speaking at the Tallahassee Photographers Association there. You can go to tallahasseephotographers.com and find the details on that. That's correct.
Derek, are you tearing up?
Yeah. I'm tearing up.
You look like you're a little misty. Susan, did she get to you?
Yeah. Actually, when she was talking about the bouquet, I actually got some chills. That's pretty touching.
God, you're such a sissy.
What? Stop. I'm sentimental,
He's a
bro.
Good boy. He's a good boy. He's sentimental right now.
He's a good boy.
All the women are like, that guy with the hair and the sentimental side. I want to be with that guy.
Right on. Well, we've got so much that we
can. Yeah, I'm in Tallahassee tonight. Yeah. Tomorrow I'm doing the one-day workshop in Tallahassee. So go to TallahasseePhotographers.com if you'd like to sign up for that. You've got
Photo World Chicago, November, the weekend of November 8th. I believe I will be speaking on the Sunday at Photo World Chicago. And we'll be doing a program called Real Weddings, Unreal Images. It's about wedding photography, how basically the point of the program is that most of us get normal weddings, not like supermodels in front of castles, which right. we seem to see a lot. But how to make really great images, even shooting like, I don't know, at the VFW or the
I do want to point
at
out
the
that
Moose Lodge or whatever.
You notice how quiet and respectful I was when Susan was.
I don't understand you. I was really expecting you to go after it.
Well, there's a reason for that, and it's because Susan doesn't know me real well. She's only actually like met me twice, and the first time she met me, I was pulled into a meeting that she was when she was president. She was pulling some photographers into a meeting to discuss image competition, and I was pulled in, and you were pulled in, and so her first encounter with me was going around the table asking people for opinions, and then they got to me and you and I pretty much took over the meeting and started, so that's her first impression of me. And so I was like, today on the show, I want to give her a better impression of me. I want to be nice and respectful and sweet. And I don't want to think that I'm just that ranting, angry guy all the time.
You know, that's funny because the first time I met Susan, she was actually in an underground kickboxing competition in Thailand. and I just went in to make some bets.
Right.
And I saw her and she was awesome. She kicks ass, too.
No, she's
excellent.
Ronda Rousey.
She's very impressive. And the second time I met her was at Imaging USA when she was in the crowd, and I just grabbed her and said, "Take a picture with me." And she said, "Okay," which I'm sure everyone does when you're the president of PPA and you're in a room with 6,000 people who are in the PPA. But I'm not even sure she remembers that. Mm. So I don't even know if Susan would recognize me on the street if she saw me.
One more thing I wanted to mention. If you're going to be at Imaging USA in January coming up, they do put they have a whole display for people who've just won their ASP fellowship in the last – not won, earned their ASP fellowship.
Oh, right.
So they're in the trade show by where they hang all the images from the National Print Competition. There'll be a whole display of Susan's thesis images.
Oh, that's great.
So you'll be able – if you happen to be in Imaging USA, you'll be able to see all the work that she submitted for her ASP fellowship, and they'll have a whole display about it. So it'll be a really cool thing to check
go
out.
Go to Imaging USA. Cool. If you've never been, go to Imaging USA. You absolutely love it. You will have a blast. You will be addicted. It'll be there's a reason that every profession has a convention every year and everyone goes.
Do you know who I'm excited to see? Awesome. I'm going to try and get on the show before Imaging USA. I don't get really excited about classes a lot, but there's a photographer who's going to be teaching this year named Jeff Rojas. And if you're not familiar with his work, check him out. He does men's portraits.
Men's portraits. I know
that guy is so awesome.
You know who else is really good who's teaching this year?
Boo Ray Perry?
Boo Ray Perry is teaching. So go to Imaging USA's website.
ImagingUSA.org. And the lineup is epic this year, including your very own personal photographer and wizard, Boo Ray Perry.
All right. If you want to see us online, just go to BooRayPerry.com or HughesFioretti.com. You can go to photobombpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. And I think that's about it.
If you have any questions, comments, or would like anything specific to be discussed on the show, send them to questions@photobombpodcast.com. And don't forget, coming up in February 20th, More details forthcoming. February 20th in South Carolina will be the very first
That's right.
Photobomb live experience we will be doing there. So we will have more information coming up on the page.
Yes, we're very excited about
that. Get stoked. It's going to be live. It's going to be real. There's going to be an audience. There'll be chickens, wheels of cheese, wizards, Humvees, all kinds of crazy stuff.
It's the wheels of cheese. The wheels of cheese I'm excited about.
The wheels of cheese.
All right. We will see you next week.
See you later.